Right now, companies like Avon and Tupperware were once a way for stay-at-home moms and others to make some money and host product parties in their own homes. Now, many multi-level marketing sellers seek their customers through social media friends and groups. You might recognize a few of the companies. LuLaRoe, selling dresses, leggings, and other clothing items in stretchy, bright prints. Unique, selling makeup and skincare. And It Works, selling things like, quote, that crazy wrap thing. We want to hear from you. Do you have experience selling products like these? Is your experience positive or negative? Do you see multi-level marketing products like this for sale on your Facebook newsfeed? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Joining us now is Darlina Cunha. She's a journalist who writes for The Washington Post, Time Magazine, The New York Times, and more. Her recent piece for The Atlantic is called Beware of Selling Yoga Pants on Facebook. Darlina, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
When did you first encounter these multi-level marketing products that are especially using social media as a way to sell?
It's been a phenomenon for quite a while now. I decided to write my piece for The Atlantic after seeing not so much the parties, which have been there for years, but the hit pieces coming out on them. So everybody has an opinion, and many people were writing these essays either in favor of them or against them. But not too many people were going into the research necessary as to, you know, to look at the trend itself. So that's why I decided to write the piece, not because it was necessarily new, but because it's coming to a point of saturation. Mm.
And can you break it down for us? How does this kind of selling work? It's referred to as multi-level marketing. What does that mean?
Well, in essence, you know, we hear the word pyramid scheme and we immediately think of the old, you know, 1980s and 90s. I mean, even before that with Avon and Mary Kay. But the 80s and the 90s is really when that whole pyramid scheme thing hit and peaked in terms of you can make $1 million and, you know, ride on our yachts. And this is a wonderful business opportunity where people kind of were really forceful about it. Multi-level marketing works in the same way, but it's not considered a pyramid scheme, even though it is shaped exactly like a pyramid, right? So you have your upline, which is, you know, say the top of the pyramid, which would be like the owners. And then they have people selling beneath them, selling beneath them, selling beneath them, and every level down, there are more people on that bracket, and there are more people divvying up the costs, right? Divvying up the revenue. So the further down the line you are, like, you know, some of these are have been around for quite a while now, anybody getting in is going to be on one of those levels where there are thousands of other people vying for those same spots and making people up the line more money.
So what did you hear from people who are selling these products? What was their incentive to start and to join in, often having to actually buy in, make their own investment in their market?
So there are a lot of things at play here that weren't necessarily at play back in the 80s and 90s, like I mentioned. The things that are motivating people now aren't those like snazzy yachts and millions of dollars and this and that. Most of the people that I talk to are perfectly happy making very little money. They are content to bring in a few extra $100 to their household, you know, every month or every couple of months. So instead of looking at it as a get-rich-quick scheme, they're looking at it as a part-time business. What many fail to understand is there are a lot of downsides to that, including it takes a lot of work. It's not a part-time business. Mm. Even to make a couple of hundred a month, you have to... You're running your own show, so you have to inventory and you have to sell and you have to do all those maths all by yourself, and then you're still in the system. You're a cog in the wheel, so you're not necessarily pocketing profit off of the hours you're spending.
So it might be more accurate to say that it's part-time income, but not necessarily part-time employment.
Correct. Yeah. So most people end up spending full-time hours trying to do this.
This just feels really similar to the gig economy that has become so big, with people working, you know, multiple small jobs to kind of, you know, cobble together an income. Do you think part of the appeal of these new companies is that it fits into that kind of mindset?
It does fit into that mindset on the outside if you don't study it. So I am a product of the gig economy. I don't have full-time work. I'm a freelance writer. but I sell my stories to publications that pay me directly. I'm not out there trying to sell my stories to my friends and family and hoping that, you know, they will then in turn, like, nobody comes and is under me, and there's no leveling involved in that. So while it looks like a gig economy thing, and it is in some respects, in a lot of ways, it's just pushing forward big corporations. They're just newer in name and in spirit.
We're talking with Darlene Acuna. She's a journalist who writes for The Washington Post, Time Magazine, The New York Times, and others. Her recent piece for The Atlantic is called Beware of Selling Yoga Pants on Facebook, and it's a look at newer multi-level marketing companies, the people who are selling for them, and their experiences. And speaking of experiences, Darlene, you observed one particular selling group for a year for this piece. Tell us about that group of women.
So I looked at the Sparky Little Spitfires, which is a posh selling group, and they invited me in. They allowed me to see their group, and you can really see some of the highlights of working in the business along with the downsides. It's not all doom and gloom. Many of these women and some men are there, and it's like a friend group to them, only instead of geeking out over Harry Potter or some kind of fandom or something that they all have in common, what they have in common is their love for this product that they're trying to sell. And so you introduce a selling aspect and a buying aspect, because a lot of them buy the products themselves, into friendship as a basis for that friendship. So while it does feel very real to them, and sometimes it is, sometimes it does fall apart. It's take or go. A lot of the women that I interviewed, interestingly enough, are no longer part of that group.
So you said that they see it as a real kind of social center. It's they've developed friendships. What is the company giving them other than inventory to sell? Do they get training? Do they get support? What is the company providing in this equation?
Yes. So they do. They do get training and support. But a lot of that is paid for by the consultants themselves in this kind of way where they don't even realize that they don't have to, they shouldn't have to pay for that, so that it's like an opportunity. It's branded to them as an opportunity. Come with us to this business meeting, this convention, but you're paying the hundreds of dollars to get there, to network and to learn from the greats and this and that. You know, so they feel as if they have been prized. You know, you've sold $2,000 worth of sales. You'll be perfect for this convention. We really want you there. Just pay $1,000 for this ticket, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the companies will provide it, and they do calls. I don't mean to say that they're nothing. They do calls, and they do coaching sessions, and a lot of it is all how do you sell better? How do you sell? It's very business-like, actually, in terms of the friendship gets right down to business and then goes right back into friendship and then goes right down to business again. But those things are not from the company itself so much as the other leaders trying to get their downlines to sell more. So they're taking time out of their day and money out of their pockets to train their downlines as people, not as part of the corporation, not funded by the company itself, by themselves.
Darlene, one of the things that you seem to have come to as a conclusion in looking at this is that these can be profitable enterprises if you get in really early, but the percentage of people that get in soon enough to really make it worth their while seems like it would be kind of infinitesimally small.
Yes, so that is a conclusion I reached, and it's a very interesting conclusion, because you need not only to get in early, which you can. I talked to two very successful women who have made 6 and 7 figures on this. They get in early, but also they are the type of people who can do it. Everybody thinks they can sell, just like everybody thinks they can write. But it takes a certain type of person to actually sell leggings. You can't just open up a store and do it. So if you get in on the first couple of legs, like Lauren had, one of the women in my story, and you are a very shiny, sparkly personality, and you do believe in this stuff, and you're not pushing it, but somehow people feel like they want to buy from you, you've got it made. But how many people is that? You know, how many companies are opening their doors, and how many of us can actually sit there and straight-face sell to our friends, family, and their friends and family and make it?
And Darlene, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Darlene Acuna is a journalist who writes for The Washington Post, Time Magazine, The New York Times, and more. She joined us to talk about her piece for The Atlantic about multi-level marketing called Beware of Selling Yoga Pants on Facebook.